This week on The Droids, a double episode, a mega episode, chapter 19 and 20 of The Mandalorian. We're here to talk about everything that happened on Coruscant. We went to Coruscant many times in the last two episodes. All that and more on The Droids.
Did you hear that? These are the droids you're looking for. You got the razor.
I'm the one.
There's always a bigger fish.
Hello there.
Rebellion's built on hope.
You got a throne here.
Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris, I am Mike. And Chris, two episodes here for just you and I to talk about. I feel like the entire state of Star Wars can hinge in the balance of what you and I think about these two episodes, right?
I mean, yeah, exactly. I hope there's enough thoughts that we can have about these two episodes.
You know, I think they set us up for a lot. I think they set us up for plenty to discuss in these two episodes. Between Chapter 19 and Chapter 20, The Convert and The Foundling. That's the two episodes that we got, and we're going to talk.
Sounds good. It sounds like an old like poem or something, or like a
an old
some
folks
kind
home?
Of old
or
limerick. The convert and the foundling. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Maybe a haiku in there somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Well, we're going to start with chapter 20, and because that's the most recent episode, that we'll talk a little bit about chapter 19. Chapter 19 was the longest episode of The Mandalorian that we've had yet.
Wow.
Chapter 20, one of the shorter episodes of The Mandalorian. But there's a lot to dig into in here. And Chris, do you recall the movie Scrooged? And I think about this for a second before. I wonder if you know where I'm going with this.
No, go ahead. I do recall it. I do recall. remember it, but
it's a classic. It's maybe one of the most underrated Bill Murray movies, I'd have to say.
Yeah.
I think it's one of my favorites. And, you know, obviously put it on every holiday season.
Sure.
But there's a moment where he's standing on the set. And they're building the set for their big Christmas Eve show where he's making everybody work. And he's trying to have a conversation. And he says, "Can you please, with the goddamn hammering?" And all I was thinking about through this episode of Chapter 20 was, more hammering? Can you please, with the hammering? We never end. I get it, but like, how often can we dramatically hammer something?
It was a story mechanism in this episode.
You're right. It did serve more of a purpose.
It did. It triggers memories. I mean, are they implying that it is some kind of magical, like, is there more to just hammering the Beskar than we know? Is it imbued in their DNA that it will relive memories once they are living the way?
Then they do this with Din in season one when he remembered being found by the Mandalorians when his home planet was being captured. They kind of did the same thing.
Well,
it was
like
the same hammering that led
to
it.
Connection noise, though, you would think that they would lead with that sound when they kind of went to that flashback. It wasn't really like, it wasn't directly tied to that sound. It was kind of just like, oh, this sounds violent, and then we'll cut to violence. Like, you would think it would be like the door closing or so, you know, like a visual kind of connection, but it's all right.
Yeah. Well, this episode is centered around, you know, spending time with the covert on the planet that we don't know, with the alligator crocodile monster, but then we get into a dragon raptor monster. Look. This is the third time in Mandalorian that we've had giant beasts for them to defeat. And this episode, there's the biggest probably parts of this was going back to Order 66 again, like you talked about. And Chris, why don't we just talk about that at the start? There's this extended sequence, Grogu's trying to escape. It never ceases to amaze me in these flashbacks to Order 66 how easily dispatched some Jedi are with a couple of clone troopers coming their way. You know, like, there's like three, and there's four Jedi, and only one Jedi survives out of three clone troopers taking them down.
Whatever's in that 66 order must have really, like,
overcharged
them or something. Maybe it gives them a little more accuracy or something,
it's
the Jedi.
Instead of, they can't, it's not that they can fly now, they can shoot now.
Yeah, exactly. I think they need to figure that out because, as soon as it happened, I mean, they're Jedi. They should be able to take thousands of them, but maybe that's why they were so, we've only really seen them be, like, really good against droids.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe that's why, like, perhaps clones were so dangerous because they could defeat Jedi.
Something was different.
I mean, they are kind of programmed to kill Jedi, so.
Well, as he's maneuvering and making his way out, Grogu does escape, and he's rescued by a familiar face. And it's a familiar face that we've actually not seen on screen in Star Wars, with the exception of, I believe he played a character in a bar in the Clone Wars.
Oh, interesting.
Sorry, in Attack of the Clones.
And he also did the reality show, the game
yes,
show.
Yes, he did the reality show. Yep. So it was a Mod Best, Jar Jar Binks, in the flesh, not as Jar Jar, playing a Jedi. And is it Beck? I think Carlian Beck. I have to look at his name again.
Yeah.
He was nice for him that he got his moment in the sun, because I think it was great that he was on the reality show, but I like that he's here and now part of the main storyline for one of the most famous characters in Star Wars. Another great way for them to give redemption arc to you know, an actor who dealt with so much negative response, and we've all heard about how he dealt with that personally, and so for him to get this kind of moment to be the one who saves Grogu and keeps him going, what a great way to introduce him as a Jedi in the story.
Yeah, it was cool. His name was Kelleran Beck.
Kelleran Beck.
Yeah. It was very cool to see him. I was like surprised. I kind of a neat choice. But then also they kind of did something cool where it was like he was obviously not playing Jar Jar, but he was on Coruscant. He was there and kind of saw all that stuff happening from a different angle. so I thought that was cool. It was a fun surprise. A nice little Easter egg. I think it's one of those things where if you know, you know. But as a character, unknowing, I thought it was a very cool character. The double lightsaber was pretty neat.
Yeah, using two. And I don't mean this to be a critique at all of including Imad Best. I love him being in this. I think the thing that caught me off guard is like this meta commentary, and that I'm not watching a story anymore. I'm watching a meta commentary,
right?
Which, it's kind of hard. Yeah. Like you want this moment for Imad Best, but I'm also kind of like, I don't know.
I think maybe we aren't. It's hard for us because we know, but I think maybe the majority of Star Wars viewers after the fact would be like, oh, it was him. The guy that played Jar Jar. Like, because I think not everyone's going to recognize him away.
True.
Just by virtue of the character he played. Was digital, the first of its kind. I agree, though. It does kind of pull you out, fourth wall break a little bit, and it makes you wonder, like, what's going on with Favreau and Filoni? And I think this episode was directed by Carl Weathers, right?
Directed by Carl Weathers.
It kind of makes you think a little bit, or like, are they being tongue in cheek by including him? Or like, do they want us to know that, or are they playing it straight? I would think as filmmakers, they're playing it straight as they can, and thought it'd be nice to include him, which is the hope.
I think my biggest concern with it is more of what was the purpose of it? Was the purpose to have a scene where they could include Imad Best, or was the purpose to have a scene that meant something to the story and the characters? I don't feel like this meant anything to the story and the characters, because we don't even need to see this scene to be like, well, we knew that Grogu escaped. We don't have to know this, because I don't think, unless Kelleran Beck is coming back in the rest of this season, if you don't pay off that character somehow being part of the story, there was no reason for us to see this escape other than to have... Hey, this is the literal moment-by-moment breakdown of how Grogu got away. Because we saw them get on a Nubian ship, which was a nice little nod again to his connection to Jar Jar.
Yeah.
Because he got onto a Nubian ship, and then they jumped hyperspace. I think it feels like it's the end. It just doesn't feel like we're going to see more.
Here's another possibility that's not out of the question. We see Jar Jar.
Oh my god, that would be crazy.
That'd be crazy. What if they had him acting opposite of Jar Jar?
That would be so cool. I am not obviously the biggest Jar Jar fan, but I think I would be like, to have both of them together would be just
kind of fun. I would like that.
I would like that, but I will still say in service of story. Yep. And I just don't know that we got even a lot in this episode.
Yeah.
What was this in service of? I think you can say in this episode, Bo-Katan becoming more deeply ingrained with the Children of the Watch.
Yeah.
And then the Mandalorian.
But at the same time, kind of not, though. She took her helmet off.
True. Well, no, but she was supposed to. You're allowed to. They made that point. Oh. As long as you're eating on your own, you can take your helmet off.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what they, because they said.
Wait, did they say that in this episode?
They did. Okay. And they also said, because she asked, like, she asked Din, how do you eat if you can't take your helmet off? It's like, you have to leave. And, you know, go be on your own. Plus, like, they've always said, have you ever taken your helmet off with someone in the presence of you? That's the thing, is you can't take your helmet off with anyone else around. If you found a way to be on your own, you're allowed to.
I feel like the dialogue in this episode the previous episode, it's like, I don't know if it's just compared to, I hate to keep comparing.
No,
it
we
to,
have to.
To
we
Andor,
have to.
But it's like, I don't understand. They told us like 5 times they can't turn their jetpacks on.
I know. They kept repeating and it.
I don't know like what the design of the dialogue is supposed to do. And I understand that like Star Wars historically, like, dialogue kind of is like used as a prop almost, and it's just kind of moving stuff along. And but then there's some moments that are incredible with the dialogue. Well, so I think you have both of those worlds. But these episodes are very like, it's not even like they're telling us; they're just like narrating what is happening sometimes. I don't quite. And that's not like a bash against the writers, but I just. It feels a little odd at times where it's just like we're watching it and they're telling us at the same time. And I'm like, I don't know if I've seen this in a show do it like this, but it's like, we're going to go up here. Or like a good example was in the, I think it was like the first or second episode of this season where he's like, Grogu, that's the castle where the Mandalorians live. like, okay.
It's like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. You know, show don't tell, but maybe show and tell.
Yeah, like
they're going on the show and tell.
Exactly, they're not like they're not just telling us something we're not seeing. Which so I guess it's appreciated, but it's a lot sometimes. In this episode, they were really honing in on those jetpacks. They wanted us. They wanted the audience to know they're loud.
Absolutely.
And they also run out a lot of found out a lot of facts about jetpacks too. It's like
you really can't go very far with.
They can't go far. They need refueled. Someone has like a device that you can bring to refuel them, and they're loud.
I think, but you made the point that, again, matters. We just can't get away from the comparisons, but if you were going to follow this on the heels of Book of Boba Fett, it's like, all right, no big deal. Yeah. We were kind of used to this, but you follow it on the heels with some of the best monologues in Star Wars, in television, in the past 5 years of cinema. I mean, like, how do you can't follow it up without it being very, very jarring to experience it in this way.
I would argue that these episodes, like especially this episode and the last one, they could almost work without dialogue. Like, remember the earlier episodes of the Mando where like he had to go get the egg and that stuff? Like there's very little dialogue in it.
Yeah.
And I think that fits the tone of the show better.
Yeah.
But maybe that I understand that's not, if this is like a broad audience thing, it might not be as accessible to to audiences if none of your characters are speaking. And I know there's a little bit of selling going on in the show
don't worry, they don't need to speak, Chris. They just need to grunt and sigh as they go up the side of a mountain.
Exactly. It was just very pointed. I don't know what it was. Something stuck out to me from that respect.
It was so funny. It feels like this show wants to have it both ways at times. And I think if this was just a mission of the week, case of the week show, what we saw early on in the first season, it would be less difficult to go and have another Beast episode. However, this one, it doesn't feel like we're getting very different Beast episodes.
No.
It's like, all right, gather a group. We're going to figure out how to take this beast down. We'll probably struggle a little bit, but eventually we'll take care of it. And then, you know, we'll have to deal with the ramifications of that afterwards.
Yeah.
I just wasn't excited to see another Beast one. And especially another Beast one that took place in exactly the same location. However, the special effects as they were fighting that raptor dragon, they looked incredible. It looked so good.
I loved it. Maybe it was their kind of like, I know they film these things in advance. They're kind of take a stab at Game of Thrones, be like, we could do dragons too.
It did. It did. It looked exactly like you could have just taken a scene from a distance where you just said, oh, that is the same dragon as the dragon in Game of Thrones.
Right.
But I also... Bo-Katan's ship at times, like I'm watching that and just being like, gosh, that looks so good.
Yeah.
It just
looks very high fidelity.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, which we can talk obviously a little bit more as we talk about chapter 19 and the kind of dogfight that she has with it with Mando as well.
Oh, yeah.
From the last episode, how good that looked against the Imperial interceptors and the bombers. And
maybe there's just like a balance issue with these episodes. And I do hope, and I'm enjoying it. I'm interested to see what happens next. And I think, like you said, I hope all of these little parts that we've been seeing are in service of a greater story or of something. If it's not going to be this kind of mission of the week attitude, and I think that there's just a balance issue happening now where it's like either it's very like high quality effects and very cool scenic scenes, and then or it's like just like awkward. I don't know how to describe it. I feel like it's reached new levels of kind of an awkwardness that it's not. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's weird to me at this
point. It is. And again, you're right. To define it as bad, no, it's just disjointed. This is a great episode to do a double episode on two episodes because they're so wildly different.
Yeah, and even though the one was an hour long.
Yeah.
It's kind of like...
It's just to talk about Chapter 19 a little bit, The Convert.
Yeah.
I feel like that episode, this is, hey, we're going to strengthen the lore. We're going to focus on what this other New Republic can be, what it's doing, how it's impacting people, how they reintegrated people from the Empire. Okay, fine. And then we're also going to go back to, here's just what we have to do with this dragon this week. That's what's so weird, right? Because what do you want to do? What kind of show do you want to be? And I don't know that they know anymore. I think they knew at one point, and now I have a theory, Chris.
Yeah.
Bear with me on it.
Let's hear it.
Someone watched some dailies of Andor and got a little bit jealous and thought, I want to do my own Andor.
Yeah.
I want to do something like that. And then The Convert essentially was their attempt at that. And it was a weak comparison to Andor, but still entertaining and interesting. It was if you are going to try to be Andor, like if Andor didn't exist, and I think I've seen this said by a lot of people, you would have watched last week's episode and said, wow, I want to see more of that show.
Yeah, I mean, I was almost halfway expecting to see some kind of crossover character. Yeah,
somebody left over. Like, we don't know what happened to Cyril, so Cyril's just in there plugging in data, even though it's been 30 years. Yeah, or something like
that. I was halfway expecting that. I mean, yes, I think the key difference of both of these episodes compared to Andor was it was like on the precipice of interesting. And again, it was just showing us stuff. They were just it was almost just like to move someone from one corner to the next.
Yeah. Which they've done prior, but
it wasn't like really telling us anything, and my guess is that these two stories, so maybe these two episodes had to be burned in a way to tell us a story where their two points connect. My guess is Grogu, obviously, and then the scientist, they're gonna have to connect at some point. So they're gonna be. I feel like these two episodes will be vindicated as necessary and helpful, but on their own, it feels like we've climbed up to two mountaintops, and then they're like, "All right, well, see you later." Because almost these last two episodes, and it's kind of good that we're doing them together, are almost identical in structure. You have a beginning to set up some action. A long pause in the middle, and then the resolution of the beginning action. They're almost like they can run in parody. Like you could watch these two episodes in any order you wanted, really. I'm very curious to see, and hopefully these two points meet up.
I have to imagine they will, because they're setting this up to pay off the season one cloning conversation and what Dr. Pershing wanted to do with Grogu. And how he said he wouldn't hurt Grogu, but he wanted to get something from Grogu, but they weren't able to extract enough. It's interesting how they've played the mystery, and we saw in season two, the bodies of what looked and appeared to be potentially Snoke.
Yeah.
If they are trying to connect the dots, and they are trying to be like, okay, here is how we solve the story of how the Emperor returned in Rise of Skywalker. It's so overt. It's so incredibly overt. It's almost not that interesting when it's that overt. And meaning like in chapter 19, they go to the opera where Palpatine tells the tale. Chris, what's the tale?
Have you ever heard the tale of Darth Plagueis? Just make that movie. I forgot all about that. Just make that movie.
But Dr. Pershing is giving a speech in that opera about cloning. I mean, you wouldn't choose that location unless you were alluding to the fact that his cloning was going to help someone evade death or, you know, like salt.
Is this season just kind of like the fix-em-ups of The Rise of Skywalker? They
have to have books and movies and video games to fix the problems of what Chris Terrio and JJ did.
Right, to kind of patch all the holes. It'd be like, no, it is actually cool. Like, look, like the Emperor was made from Grogu's blood.
which you know, it can be good.
I'm all about it. I think that's kind of funny. Like,
I agree with you. I think the issue to me is I'm like, all right, now we're just going to wait for them to have a big reveal, which we all already know.
Right.
Unless they abandon it, which if they were to abandon it, it's even sloppier.
Oh, I mean, the other thing they could do is with like, with Andor and Andy Serkis's kind of question mark end of that, of his run on the show. Like, what if they're like, yeah, we found one of these prisoners that we had frozen for a while. And then it becomes Snoke. It would explain the voice.
Well, you could tell there was that very scary moment for Snoke when he saw a pool of water and he lost it. So
he did not like it. Yeah, exactly. What is this? But no, yeah, I think that this kind of meandering, though, it's the problem is, and I always think Star Wars is best when we're learning something new about the world. And I think the chapter is 19 and 20, right? Yeah.
Yep.
19 did show us something cool about Coruscant, which found it very interesting, where it was like, oh, the city is built on top of whatever geography is there. And so like that mountaintop peeking out, I thought that was a cool detail.
Didn't they take that directly from the High Republic, though?
I think there was a mountain that we're talking about in the High Republic, and I don't know if it was the same one. I was thinking that same thing, though.
Yeah, because in the first, in Light of the Jedi, which, you know, we totally finished and totally talked about the last five chapters on here.
Out. Yeah, you can go back and listen. Yeah.
Go back and listen. Don't worry about the last five chapters. That episode's out there, I promise.
Right.
They have a whole thing with Chancellor Lena So, you know, spending time around that rock. Yeah. I don't know. Again, it could be a different... I don't remember well enough, but I think that was what they were alluding to. And then we see it in chapter 19 and chapter 20, and we see the train passage in chapter 20 as well in Order 66 when they're trying to escape. It was interesting to me. Was it just a cost-saving measure to have the same CGI locations for them in two different episodes, or was there a reason why
we were seeing
the same places?
They're,
I don't know.
They're showing us something new about that world, and I mean, they could be doing some fan service for the Light of the Jedi fans. So I think... myself included in that. I think that is cool, and I appreciate the story angle from that and kind of the scrapyard aspect of it. I think those details are neat.
Yeah.
It was just kind of the overall of, we've seen some of this before. We kind of know how this goes. We're not learning anything.
We didn't move the ball forward.
We're learning details, but we're still not learning new story, I guess. Yeah. Like, if...
Because you could get to wherever they're going to go, where Grogu and Dr. Pershing come back together.
Yeah.
Without these two episodes, you would still know exactly where they are and exactly what they want.
Like, it just felt a little middling.
Yeah.
And we got some details, and I won't argue that. And I enjoyed watching them. It's always great to be back on Coruscant. And I love the scrapyard element of it. I love the idea of a planet that's all city, and how does that work? How does that function? And they were eating intergalactic ice cream, and
that was pretty cool.
I loved it. And then the whole kind of a little weird to try to invoke empathy for the Empire, I guess, a little bit. But I understand what they were doing there, and kind of the rehabilitation program, all that stuff. I thought was very interesting.
I liked the world of everybody on that Coruscant train.
Yeah.
You know, and they reused one of the creatures from, I think, Canto Bight. You know, the giant creature who's standing there giving him a look up and down as he gets on the train.
Yep.
That's fun to see those creatures again. And they're probably not meant to be the same character, the same race or same alien species. But I liked that, and I liked the, you know, going from car to car to evade the droid, which felt very fugitive-esque to me.
I swear they were kind of evoking that chase song a little bit in there, too. I heard some of that.
Yeah. And so that was, it was a cool, and I liked the cookie moment. I really liked Dr. Pershing. I liked the actor who played him. I liked what he was trying to deal with. And I thought it was, you know, very, very sad that he had to have his mind wiped. But, you know, a lot of questions brought up about who the New Republic is. The New Republic's tactics are similar to the Emperor, but just dialed down a little bit. Like, it's just, you know, the New Republic's going to wipe your mind a little bit. Just not entirely, but unless somebody from the Empire comes along, then you'll wipe your mind entirely. So
I don't know where at in Star Wars that, like, I mean, I guess it's, now I'm just, like, having a catharsis now. So I guess the Jedi can do mind tricks, and it's kind of like an organic process.
Yeah.
And so the Empire, they use technology to kind of get in people's brains and mess with them. So I guess it's kind of the other half of, if you're going to do a mind trick, then I guess they kind of, it's like artificial mind tricks.
Yeah, they have to try to...
I was just going
to
say, though, I feel like it's recently, it's become kind of a key plot device of Star Wars to interrogate someone's brain.
that's always been, like, standby on Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's just... There's no way around it. And the interrogation, certainly a lot more frightening in Andor.
Yeah.
But I did like, you know, as we saw the opera, like, I felt like the volume, for the most part, looked decent.
Oh, yeah.
But it's... Maybe it's because it's kind of seamless between the volume and the green screen of the prequel era, where it's like that's not that hard for them to try to recreate.
Yeah.
And some set design stuff, again, sort of felt like it was pulled from Andor, but was nice. I like the cookie element, but it was kind of fun just that they were talking about the rations and learning a little about them. But as you said, how much empathy do we really want? I think one of the things that's come up to me, you know, Chris, we talk about like what Star Wars usually is, what it's meant to mean, what it represents. And as you expand the universe and you expand into other stories, you have it starting to represent different things. And I think they always try to say Star Wars represents this one thing.
Yeah.
But I think it's starting to get to the point where it's like with Grogu and with the Mandalorian and with him training now to be a youngling, a foundling, and potentially be a Mandalorian. And this shift away from what it felt like where Bo-Katan might have offered this opportunity for them to get out of everyone in their helmet to now being essentially seems like we're driving towards everyone in their helmet unless she has some big kind of switch of heart after what she's been dealing with. It's starting to make me be like, what is the message here? What is this meant to be? You're stronger as a group of people in the Mandalorian way where... They're all faceless and follow a creed. That's something that is, as they spend more time in it, feels not very Star Wars to me.
Yeah.
But that being said, in a way, that can be good because obviously things like Andor doesn't feel very much the same as Star Wars. But I think that's the difference. Andor and the focus on the rebellion and the focus on hope and the focus on trying to break through with the Empire still feels very connected to what Star Wars has always represented. If we're going to spend all this time with the Mandalorians... I don't know that I care about these group of Mandalorians, not just because we can't see their face, but because of what they seem to want is so vague.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything to me.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think in Star Wars tradition, when it, I guess institutions don't work out. So I think my hope is that they have a little trick up their sleeve where it's, we're going to get a twist.
I hope the reversal, like the reversal for Bo, if she's like, hey, you know what? The creed, I don't agree with the creed.
Well, it just seems like the Mando plan is going too well right now. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like the Mandalorian, like, they're like, everyone's like, all right, we're all in again. Let's keep it going. Like, I think they're painting a picture of everything is hunky-dory. And then it's going to be like, wait a second. It's not.
Yeah. How did you feel, Chris, about the opening of Chapter 20 where they were all practicing and firing randomly into the water and climbing things and sparring? What did you think of that Mandalorian moment?
It was a little weird at like the beginning, too, when they're just like all on a beach. And
they're just like, I'm firing here, I'm firing there. What flamethrower? There it goes.
I mean, they certainly don't hate the sand, but it was like almost like, add action. Just do something that you would think would be Mandal. Like, they could have it felt like they didn't have choices of scenes there, so they had to show the wide shot, and it was just like people punching air in a wide shot.
Chris, I thought the wide shot, I was just like, it made me think, you know, this is why at times Star Wars being a movie and being cinematic, you don't have stuff where it makes the Mandalorians look like less than. There's something where Bo-Katan, Din Djarin, they look amazing.
Yeah.
They look perfect. All of these disparate colors and random assortment of Mandalorians is less cool to me. It just doesn't look as good.
I don't know. Yeah. It's just there's a lot going on, and it's hard to sometimes make it feel as real to the world as it does when it's just like a bunch of people. And then also, like, all their suits are pretty pristine looking too. Yeah. So I don't know.
But I wish there's an aesthetic quality there that I
think they could have easily said, like, all right, well, here's where they train on flamethrowers, and here's what, like, kind of show each group, maybe a little more organization. Like, I don't get a feel for who the Mandalorians are at this point in time. Like, it feels like I want to see more. I don't know what the kind of parody that they're trying to come up with, or unless they're trying to make up their own kind of, like, here's how they live and train and stuff. I'm just not seeing anything that's consistently telling me who they are.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's kind of hard. And then all of a sudden a beast comes and everyone's like doing their own thing.
And then they're all trying to fight, but not fighting in the same way. And not nearly as like these incredible warriors that they're kind
of touted. Well, because it was kind of set up as like, here's this code of living. Yeah. And then it seems like beyond that, everyone's kind of like, oh, I don't know.
I'll shoot you with a paintball.
I think we'll have some twists. I mean, I think the ultimate shot of Grogu in the full armor.
Oh my God, that'll be so funny.
Is what we're gearing up to. I really don't know
how that could look anything but just like hilariously cute. Like, you know, like he's going to be. Mandalorians are meant to be imposing, and then he's going to have to. What are his ears going to be pinned down? Are they going to be.
Little baby Iron Man. Yeah. I mean, people will go nuts. Like, it'll be.
Oh, you're right. It'll sell so many things.
That's going to be the end shot of this season. And then I think we might get a twist though with the leader, the
armorer or Paz Vizsla.
The armorer, right?
Yeah, she seems a little bit like kind of like you know, whatever you say.
I think she might be revealed to be someone connected to something else, and we'll get a little bit there.
Yeah, I mean, that would be interesting to see if they did that. I really question the idea of bringing in the babies of the raptor at the end. However, Chris, we know they're kind of about rehashes.
Yeah.
It's going to be, well, here's three Mandalorians riding three dragons to end the season, similar to the way that the Rancor was ridden by Boba Fett.
Will be ridden. I was hoping one of them would be named, like, Blue. And they'll train him.
And then somehow Chris Pratt appears. He becomes a buddy, you need a helmet over here. It's like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I think, yes.
Because it's totally impractical. It made no sense at all. Why in the world would there be... How could they even keep those on a ship in a space where they wouldn't get eaten by the babies? But yet it's there so they can set up some big ending where they fly on three raptors.
Are they intelligent? I mean,
I don't believe so. Not that I know of.
It'd be funny if they became Mandalorians. Like, I would like.
Well, they called them foundlings. They called them foundlings. Yeah,
I was gonna say. I think it'd be funny if, like, all of a sudden, Mandalorians, like, we need all we can get. Anything, anyone, and they're all wearing the armor. That'd be the best.
Oh, that would be so funny. So weird. What else did you think about these two episodes, Chris? Anything else stand out to you? I feel like, you know, there was Bo-Katan obviously talking about seeing the Mythosaur and the armorer brushing her off.
Yeah. I mean, I found that interesting. I listened to your episode before that, and you did refer to it as the Mythosaur. I was like, how did Mike know that was the Mythosaur? I mean, there you go. I think
I'm in the waters with the beast.
That's kind of a cool deal because it's making Bo-Katan like a believer. And I think that the armorer is playing with that fact to be like, yeah, you see, like, armorer might not have known if it was real or not, but it was kind of like, you believe long enough, you might start to see some stuff. So what does that mean? I don't know.
I mean, I think it's setting up probably this Catwoman and Batman scenario where both Din and Bo may want to work together, but both have this claim to the throne. And even though Din doesn't want it, she can't necessarily take power in Mandalore without defeating him. So they're just... and now she's got the Mythosaur side. He's got the Dark Saber. There's a good kind of claim for both of them, even though Din may not be trying to fight for it. But it just sort of seems like we're leading to a little bit of a headbutt as to who is going to be the leader.
I kind of wish we just get to it. Yeah. Just get to it. Like, why? We don't need anything else.
But what else do they do after that, Chris? Yeah. Like, because they're not going to do Ezra and Thrawn in this series. That's for the Ahsoka series. You know, maybe they have a brief cameo before they're really part of the other series. But so what is this show? Where does it go? What does it head to? Yeah. Because if you focused on Mission of the Week, it could be anything. But because you focused on tying it into the greater Rebels Clone Wars lore, and basically focusing on, like, they're going to rebuild Mandalore with this group of Mandalorians, well, then the rest of this is going to be centered on what Mandalore becomes, and then how do they fend off fighting who wants to take Mandalore from them as well, or what other factions of Mandalorians are there? I guess there's more stories to be told within it, but I'm just sort of like, I don't know where our endgame is with this, which is kind of interesting to think of a lot of shows that are coming on right now. Barry is in its final season.
Yeah.
Succession is in its final season. Ted Lasso's in its final season. Like, stories that kind of were written with an endpoint in mind, which has not always been Star Wars' strong point.
Right.
So,
it's hard to kind of nail the landing in the Star Wars universe, I think. Yeah. I don't know where it's going to go. I'm certainly interested to find out, and I am certainly enjoying myself watching these. And I think one part of Star Wars that can get lost when you watch something that is too good like Andor is that there is like a silly campiness to
you're totally right about that, Chris.
And I think it's okay to have that. It's okay to like it. There's no judgment there, and I think it's also what makes the show a little fun. So I think if you're gonna have Andor, you can also have the kind of the 180 direction of we found three foundlings like suit them up, because I mean Clone Wars is chock full, and Rebels is chock full of these kind of scenarios and these kind of episodes. So,
well, but that's what I mean, is I feel like Clone Wars and Rebels did, but they didn't be like their only missions are about monsters. It's let's have the Bendu series of episodes. Let's have the droids just go on their own mission. Right. It's just about saving someone from a monster.
Exactly. Well, but it's also, I think with Clone Wars and Rebels, you get little tiny pieces of the overall arc. And maybe they're trying to do that same approach with this show, because, I mean, it is the same people. So you're getting smaller pieces.
Yeah.
You're not getting the larger pieces, and maybe that's by design because they have to fulfill so many episodes. How many episodes is this season?
I think it's 10. Okay. Eight to 10. No, okay. It's eight. It's eight episodes.
Okay. All right. Well... Yeah,
and this was the only other one that Dave Filoni has a writing credit on. I think, and which is felt odd to me, because that's why I was thinking of Clone Wars, because it just felt like Dave Filoni has so many more interesting episodes of the week, missions of the week stories that they could have come up with something more interesting than what they just did.
Unless the point was to get them three dragons.
Yeah, exactly. But which again, what's the story point there? Is the story point because we want to have something that looks cool in the finale, or is the story point because there's no way for them to do what they need to do without these three dragons?
Right.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out where that all kind of fits in.
We'll find out.
We gotta watch.
We're halfway done to the season, so hopefully, I mean, either this is the end of the first act or the start of a new one. So
Chris, you have a lot of experience with becoming the foundling to people who murdered your parents, right?
Absolutely.
they must not be very observant. They're so still young enough. They didn't really realize that the Mandalorians were the ones.
Yeah, those dragons are going to be like. They better hope they're not sentient.
They can't be intelligent. If they were intelligent, they wouldn't do anything for them.
Yeah, they're going to be like, no, you just attacked us while we tried to get food. Yeah.
they also come off of Bo-Katan's ship with a big hunk of meat. To get the
where did this hunk of meat come from?
Where'd you find that?
Does Bo-Katan just have meat in the ship?
There's a meat locker on the ship. She doesn't freeze things in carbonite. She just has a big meat locker. That's what she's got going on.
I'm glad there's a larger ship still. I was kind of bummed out when it was like just Jin and Grogu flying in the little starfighter
in the N1. Yeah,
because I felt like obviously the ship was a part of the character of like just having different rooms and things. That's always fun to see in Star Wars. So I'm glad Bo-Katan's ship can fill that void a little bit.
Chris, last thought on chapter 20. I think there's a couple other things I want to mention about chapter 19, but Bo-Katan takes off her helmet, and that hair is perfect. My question for you is, will we ever get a helmet hair that actually looks like helmet hair for anybody in this show?
I mean, I think it's the future, or it's a long time ago. I think they have nailed the technology
to keep your helmet,
to keep your hair looking good in that helmet. You saw all the circuitry that was in that little Beskar plate.
Yep.
There's a lot of stuff going on in there.
Yep. You're right. but I, you know, I feel like we've covered the majority of it. I think, you know, we see some, Mon Calamari in the episode in the convert as well. What'd you think of the performance of essentially the convert, or the one who ended up tricking Dr. Pershing? What was her name again?
I think they could have given us like two more details of just give us any kind of motivation.
That was hard. All. It was very hard because it was like, what is she doing this for? Who is she just working for Gideon? If she's working for Gideon, we don't know anything about her. It's just difficult.
I would have liked, just by the end, I mean, is she showing that like she can't be redeemed? Is she her own person? Sorry, there's someone playing loud music outside my window. I'm sure you could hear it on the mic. It sounded like it got louder too as I was talking. What is her story? Is she is this her, or is she part of a larger scheme? And I guess we'll potentially find that out, but I think they could have thrown us a little bone to know where we were going with that.
I think it feels like the larger scheme. I did like the performance by Katie O'Brien, who's Aliyah Kane. I liked her throughout it. But she was on Gideon's ship in season 2, but we didn't really see much about her then. But she plays the whole thing well, but it did feel like this is a very dramatic thing for her to do without us knowing more than she must still have ties to the Empire and doesn't have and still wants to do something for the Empire and is encouraging him to keep his cloning ways going because they know that it's going to be valuable to them. And that's why, you know, again, like we said, it feels very telegraphed where this is all going. So fine. But I guess I wanted to be like, hey, she's motivated by this. This is why she pulled the bait and switch on him. But maybe this is, we just talked about them doing too much showing and telling. So this is maybe their lack of showing and telling.
Yeah. I mean, or if they had given us a clue to this in season 2, which I couldn't place her exactly because it had been a while. So I was kind of like, do I remember her or don't I? Or like her kind of defining trait when she was in the ship. But I'm sure we'll find out. They seem like they didn't set that. Hopefully they didn't set that all up for nothing.
I think they're going to have to come back to it somehow. But again, how do these paths all cross? You know, what is Dr. Pershing going to be? Is his mind completely wiped now?
Yeah.
Or they talked about it's kind of almost this full reset. So what's going to happen is he will have not gone through all of the training to be part of the New Republic anymore, but he'll still have his knowledge of how to do the clone work that he needs to do. So they'll be able to almost take him fresh and new again, and he won't even remember that she betrayed him.
Right.
And he could be, you know, helpful to the cause of cloning again.
He could remember his old Empire ways. I mean, I just want him to get to it. Just get to it. That's what the lesson from Andor is. Just
get to it.
Just get to the story. Yeah, I
know. They just always, they were always directly to the point. Which was awesome.
We'll find out.
Any other thoughts, Chris, on how this, I can't get past the idea that the New Republic, that after everything that they sacrificed and went through in the original Star Wars trilogy, that what the New Republic is, you know, potentially a torturous regime. It's just kind of like,
history says it happens.
Well, you're right. But the more they tell these stories, the more that they do this, the more you jeopardize I've been able to very mentally detach some of the stories, even though they're all connected, but to represent the way they did in The Force Awakens, where Han Solo and Princess Leia aren't together anymore. Their marriage was falling apart. You know, our heroes who had this happy ending, what they built in out of the success and the win that they had actually is something that is also doing terrible things the way the Empire did terrible things.
I mean, that becomes, I think that's kind of the operatic nature of it all, I think.
Yeah.
Well, the cycles. If you look at it,
yeah, you're right. If you and that's, here's maybe that slippery slope back into the First Order, right? And that's maybe she is tied, Kane is tied to the First Order because she's going to be, you know, obviously part of bringing Snoke back.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, it is operatic, but this is almost that level of like why it's difficult for people to watch The Last Jedi when they were like, this is our hero. He's always done the right thing.
Right.
How can he do the wrong thing? Yeah, or how can he leave the fight?
It's almost making it cliche now. It's they got to just figure out the, I know exactly what you're trying to say. Yes. They can't just keep doing it for the sake of story, or maybe we just don't need to watch it all so often that it's happened.
Well, I guess you just don't want to have that moment of pure elation for what happened at the end of Return of the Jedi where they defeat the Empire, just to be like, that's great, but people are
meanwhile
also terrible.
Yeah.
So that's the dangerous game you're playing. I'd have to imagine writing these have to be complicated. If you're a person who is so concerned about what you're saying about the canon, or the person who works at Lucasfilm, who's meant to be the one keeping things all in balance and keeping track of how it all is tied together.
Yeah.
It's got to be very difficult because you're like, one little nugget that you play in this could turn the tide of what represents, you know, part of the story of Star Wars.
Yeah. And I think maybe also it's kind of a generational play too. It's like people that watched the first one, at their youth, and then people that watch the prequels at their youth, and people that watch their the sequel trilogy in their youth. Like, it's almost like picking up and kind of recapping that concept for everyone at different points in time. So I think we as kind of the quote unquote super fans or stupid fans, we have the curse of all of it, knowing that it repeats. But I think if you're someone jumping into it, I mean, what greater hook is there to say, oh, things were normal, now they're bad again, without really knowing that this happened before, you know?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I don't know. Just thought.
Yeah. Well, we will see where this all heads, Chris. I feel like these, you know, it's giving us a lot to talk about. There's no negative to all the different things we can kind of get into with this. And like you said, I'm still having fun with it, but there's just some times where my eyebrow is raised, being like,
it's more questions than answers, but hey, it's all right. I'm happy it's on. It's good.
It is. It's just nice to have good Star Wars. It's nice to be able to watch Star Wars. I want a little bit more of the Andor version of it, but we'll plug along and get back to it and have the fun that we are having with this. And like we said, you know, that first part of episode 19, where it is the dogfight, beautiful. And him jumping out to get to the N1 starfighter and then having that awkward landing was just kind of fun. And then he gets in the ship right before he's blown away. Before then, the Imperial bombers come in to bomb Bo's home. Awesome. Just so much fun to watch. I loved all of that.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, I'd either give us like all that in one episode or give us all the other stuff.
Oh, give us an entire dogfight episode.
It'd be wonderful.
It would cost them.
It would be like one of the. It'd be like the original Clone Wars cartoons were basically like that. The hand drawn animated ones were basically 20-minute long battles.
Oh, that would be amazing. But we will continue onward with The Mandalorian and come back next week. Chris, I hope you have no helmet hair this week, because I know you're walking around with your Mandalorian helmet every day.
Joke's on the helmet. I've got no hair anyhow. So.
That is going to do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. We'll be back next week with more Mandalorian.
Annie Beck.
Hello there.
You boys want some lineup ice cream?
Don't touch the mountain.
Never touch a mountain, Chris. Never.